Hey everyone, this is your host, Dr. Ryan McConnell, an assistant professor in the physical therapy program at Belmont University. I invite you all to join me in gaining worldly advice through weekly episodes on all the PT hot topics that would interest you at any level of training. Welcome to Spilling the DPT. Hello, everybody. We're welcoming Dr. Sheldon Feltz today to the episode, and he's going to be sharing a whole lot of information about skilled nursing and management, as well as just some other differences from typical settings that you'd see physical therapists practice in. So that being said, I want to let Sheldon introduce himself and talk about his training, where he's come from, and all the things that you need to know about Sheldon.
Ryan, first off, I just want to say appreciate you having me on, man. I feel it's an honor. You're a Jedi in the business, man. But for me, I'm a director of rehab in East Tennessee, specifically up in Kingsport, Tennessee. I graduated from the University of Tennessee undergrad and then went on to South College for my Doctor of Physical Therapy training, which is a hybrid program. So it's gaining popularity with its mix between online learning and on-site learning, which now is becoming, I think, probably more popular in the midst of coronavirus, pandemic, social distancing. Maybe they were ahead of themselves 2 or 3 years ago in preparations for something like this. But that's pretty much what led me here. And then, of course, throughout school, I've had the pleasure of meeting Ryan with an internship that lasted about 6 months with Benchmark, in which he was my CI, he was my mentor, and a good friend, I like to call you. But that's, you know, kind of led me down the path of physical therapy, brought out a lot of motivation upon graduation and pushing through school to try to land the job.
Yeah, so your first job was actually in outpatient world, and if you just want to touch real quickly on kind of what you learned in outpatient, just a couple lessons, and then why you decided to transition into a different setting and eventually take a management role.
Sure. So starting out, I think most schools, as far as I know, they like to promote the outpatient setting. And in general, I believe the basic goal of that is because that's where you use the majority of such a broad spectrum of knowledge. Almost everything we learn throughout school can be used at some point within an outpatient setting. No matter, you know, if you're with a child, an infant, an older adult, you know, athlete, it doesn't matter. You're going to use pretty much everything you've learned. So I did that. I did the 6 month internship with you in Nashville, and then I went on to work full time in an outpatient clinic that was very busy. It had a lot of demands, and I think, you know, hindsight 2020, I wasn't sure if I was prepared for that volume as a new grad. And to be honest, it was very overwhelming. I didn't really, you know, I'd heard about it. Obviously, I heard that it was a busy clinic, but I was like, man, you know, the demands of this, I don't know if I can keep up physically, mentally. It was exhausting. Day-to-day basis, you know, they were, you know, 12 patients a day is pretty standard, pretty normal. For that clinic, they wanted to push it up to 15 or 18 patients a day. Some days I felt good. I felt motivated to do that because the ultimate goal was helping people. And that's what we do this for. But, you know, when you get to that type of volume, it's like, man, I don't know if I can keep up with this. I don't know. And I saw you worked hard in your clinic and you got a, you know, you built a huge following. You helped a lot of people, but maybe that's not for everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which I think is completely fair, and I wouldn't want anybody who's listening to this to think, oh yeah, like have to go to outpatient, and that's kind of what we're trying to do here is shed light on some of the other settings from people that have been there, seen that, and really just shed some light on what sort of internal processes took you the direction you do, because it's going to be different for everybody, and I think, so one of the things I hear you saying is the actual demand for at least the metric that we would say in outpatient world is productivity or visits per day, visits per week, that sort of thing, was not maybe as demanding in this setting that you transitioned to. Is that fair to say?
Definitely fair to say. And I think, you know, I've only been working for 2 years. In my very short career, I've experienced pretty much every setting. I finished 8 months in outpatient, and I needed a break. I needed to do something different, so I went to skilled nursing, and which I also worked PRN and home health, skilled nursing, hospital setting. I tell people that I've been working for a short time, but I feel like I've gained a lot of experience in each setting and was able to try to figure out a particular path that I thought was beneficial to me and allowed me to ultimately help people just in a different setting.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to pay dividends in the future. What do you feel, I don't want to sound ignorant here, but I am as far as the setting skilled nursing. What does productivity look like? Like, how do y'all measure that in your setting specifically? Or what have you heard out there?
So for us, and of course, some people think, oh, skilled nursing, you don't have to have productivity. It's not like outpatient. You don't have to be as busy. It's super laid back. And in reality, it's not the case. You know, you learn once you get into skilled nursing, it's the productivity standard is just as high. For an evaluating therapist, they want it to be about 85%.
What does that mean?
So 85% of your day needs to be consisting of evaluations, progress notes, treatments, and discharges. 85% of your day needs to be a billable amount of time versus any sort of downtime. So if you think about it, you know, you're still busy in that setting.
So downtime would be considered, would that be including somebody who wasn't capable of participating in physical therapy that day? So the equivalent of an outpatient cancellation?
Sure. So outpatient cancellation, it would be that time between patients, say in an outpatient setting where it's your 9 o'clock canceled. So you have to kill a little bit of time between 9 and 9:45. So you're catching up on notes. You still want to be busy. You want to be productive. But it's measured in outpatient. They don't really measure it to an exact percentage because most outpatient settings are salary based. You know, you're going to be there for about 8 hours a day and you're going to need to see a certain amount of people per day.
Right.
And in a skilled nursing, your time can vary. Most therapists are not salary therapists. They're paid by the hour.
Right.
And honestly, most companies, they want to get the therapist in and they want to get them out. And
right.
It's become a harsh reality. Get them out as soon as possible.
Yeah, that would make sense. As far as performance of your staff clinician in the skilled nursing facility, could you tell us a little bit about what that looks like? Like what is a good therapist, I guess, by definition from the business perspective, and then also just from a qualitative, like what you see in a good therapist, maybe not measured.
Good question. Measurable aspects for a skilled nursing. Let's stay on that topic. Productivity is obviously a huge standard for evaluating a therapist. The next is the amount of units, billable units that they can do with each person. So obviously that varies. It's going to vary based on the payer source, whether they are coming from a straight Medicare perspective, a commercial insurance, or a Medicare Part B, which is more of an outpatient payer source.
Right.
So for those people, obviously you want the higher units. You want to be able to say that you spent a higher amount of time and that justified the reimbursement and also justified paying the therapist for their time in the building.
Right.
So to me, you know, on paper, you want a therapist that bills a high number of units because they want to work hard with the patients. They want to strive for success with their patients or their residents. And you also want someone who's very productive.
Right.
They're not spending too much downtime in the building because that's, you know, from a manager perspective, that's money lost. each time their productivity numbers drop below.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. I mean, it's like any industry. You unfortunately can't disengage from that or disconnect from the reality of bottom line and being able to justify staff and programs and things like that. Now, speaking of which, could you tell us or shed a little bit of light on maybe what you would focus continuing education on or what you talk to your staff clinicians about maybe developing professionally? What are some of those skills that would be different than outpatient?
For skilled nursing, I definitely say it doesn't hurt to get some CEUs in Medicare reimbursement, any sort of anything dealing with how to properly code and document, because those things, it kind of seems like in my perspective, they get more harshly ridiculed in a skilled nursing. You know, you have to deal with a lot more denials.
Right.
So if you can obviously negotiate and try to push your therapist to getting more CEUs in that direction, it's going to be better for them. It's also going to be better for the company as well.
Right. Now, is there any sort of outcome tool or outcome measure that you use in your setting, just as far as skilled nursing goes? You'd be familiar with LEFS or COOS or DASH and all that stuff. Are those the same outcomes that you're using in skilled nursing, or is it different?
It's very different.
So let's talk about that.
You want to put a lot of weight in the outcome measures because that's how we get paid. Essentially, that's how you show that you can do well at your job and you can make progress. The outcome measures at skilled nursing facility, they're different, but they're the same, essentially. You know, we do more with the, I'm trying to think of something off the top of my head. For occupational therapists, it's a modified Barthel. That's pretty much a go-to for occupational therapy. For physical therapy, it's the elderly mobility scale. That's a pretty generic outcome measure that's going to, you know, you're going to capture a whole lot in one outcome measure based on bed mobility, transfers, gaits, all that sort of stuff with each person.
Now, what, when you go to a review process with one of your clinicians, and you don't have to give away again, I always disclose, like, it doesn't need to be trade secrets or anything like that, but what generic assessment are you doing to justify, you know, retention of the employee or promotion or increase in merit? What sort of things have to be exemplified in your setting to be worth at least, and I don't want to generalize your setting, like as in skilled nursing, this is how they all behave. But for you, what conversations are you having with your employees about what their next year should look like?
Ooh, I'll be honest with you, man. I feel like I'm a little bit different because when you talk to your employees, for me personally, what I feel like is the most beneficial thing a person can do is generally care about the people you work with and show a difference with how you act and how you interact with them. Because let's be honest, not everyone is cut out to be in a skilled nursing facility or that type of setting. Not everyone has that mindset or that ability to show that type of empathy and be creative. Because the way insurance companies are going now, it's almost like it's more of a goal to get the most medically complex patients you can get.
Yeah.
And that's not good for therapy because it's almost the exact opposite of what you want to work with.
That's the truth. The modifiers and complexity are changing the game. And I would imagine, obviously, because you operate under RUGs as well. Is that correct?
No. So the RUG system is gone.
RUGs are gone.
So under PDPM, it's really based on, obviously, the GG score is important, which is that's basically, they're most basic functions with occupational therapy and physical therapy, self-care and mobility. That's right. How reimbursement is with Medicare A. You're going to get a specific amount each day, whether you give them 30 minutes or 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is not good. I mean, I don't agree with it. I think it's, you know, it's a fine line between the RUG system and the PDPM system.
Right.
it seems almost like there's more negative in each way than there is positive.
So, and that would make sense. Obviously, I think we could unload a whole hour episode on just that.
Gosh.
Try and steer away from that a little bit. As a manager, you know, what is the hardest thing in a skilled nursing that you deal with day to day as far as management goes?
Obviously, your staff is, for some people, that's enough to handle. But as a manager in a skilled nursing facility, you have to be prepared to deal with your rehab staff, your nursing staff, because you're going to be the middleman between nurses and therapists and CNAs and therapists. And you have to be able to work together. I mean, you have to be able to be a good communicator with your staff and the nursing staff, because really without them and the CNAs, it makes your job so much more difficult in this setting.
Right. Do you feel like that is a skill that you've used particular continuing education or outside resources that to sharpen that saw? What have you done to improve your ability to communicate or facilitate between the professionals, or so, you know, we would call it interprofessional collaboration, that sort of thing?
I'd say my biggest thing is observation. I try to, you know, like you, for instance, I had the opportunity to be with you for 6 months. I watched how you were able to communicate with patients and other medical providers, people in the community, stuff like that. It makes a bigger difference than, you know, that's not easy to learn, to go out and learn without actually visually seeing it and surrounding yourself with those people who do it well.
Right. I think that's, I appreciate the compliment too, but
you're welcome.
I that's the exact same way that I learn. I'd say that, you know, I encourage anybody out there just in any setting, even if you were, there's a lot of books written on this, but if you took over a position just to observe for 90 days and kind of see what's going on. But in general, watching somebody who does do that well and taking note of it, I don't think that I had that awareness in PT school necessarily, but that's something that I would hope would be brought to the forefront in this conversation is that, hey, while you're on rotations or you're observing other clinicians, listen to how they're addressing people, watch the body language of the people around them, and yes, really pay attention to how they're receiving that message. Because they're in any way to be an effective manager or leader, for that matter, with poor communication skills. And I think that's definitely something you hit on.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Because if you don't see it, I mean, you can measure joint mobility, manual skills, you can understand pathological history, you can do all that. But without the communications, if you're a student, pairing yourself with the right CI or the right setting, the right people, you know, those soft skills are really what, you know, I think enhance someone's career and their ability to obviously care for patients.
Right. So bouncing around just a little bit, obviously, you know, communication skills are huge, but what would you say the biggest gripe is of the staff in general?
Not enough help.
Not enough help? Yeah, because yes. I was going to say, as a manager, it's usually staffing, right? Staffing is a tough thing to do, and balance that line of the bottom line with the resilience of your staff. I mean, yes, you can see them slowly, you know, losing momentum, and that you had a bad month. You know, you can't afford it.
Oh, easy. And just like the nursing, the lack of CNAs will give you more disgruntled therapists and more unhappy employees than anything else. Because if, you know, in this setting, you got to have the CNAs because they, you know, they're the glue.
So what sort of ratio would you talk about? You know, I'm thinking of this as almost a tech or a PTA, and I don't mean to undermine the profession at all, but I see it as support staff. Like a CNA would be a very strong support staff with a very particular job. But could you help those of us who haven't worked around CNAs, like, understand that relationship and kind of what maybe a ratio would look like if you were interviewing with a skilled nursing facility, like what you'd want to hear in that interview?
Oh, definitely. So For our building, for instance, there's, let's say we have 100 residents. That includes skilled residents who are there for a short period of time, or long-term care, who they live in the facility. Mm-hmm. For 100 residents, I would love to see at least 6 CNAs on staff a day. I mean, that's probably a little low itself.
Right. You
know, I would generally probably a good ratio somewhere just ballpark 1 CNA per 10 residents or 10 patients in this setting. Because without that, oh my gosh, I mean, your day can be a good day or a bad day. You know, it depends on what you're doing. You know?
What about physical therapists? So if you were just looking at census of residents, in understanding, okay, I have a working staff of this many PTs or this many PTAs, what's a number that you'd look for with the ratio of residents to PTs? And I understand that may not be the exact number I'm looking for, but I'm sure you can translate for us.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, because without the right amount of census, you're not going to have the affordability to have a therapist or a full-time therapist or one that's even part-time. So you need the census. I'd probably say if you have 50 residents, you need at least 2 therapists, maybe a full-time therapist and a full-time PTA. Now, all 50 are not going to be getting skilled services at any given time.
That's right.
You're probably going to look at somewhere around 25 on caseload.
Right.
Which would be, you know, that could easily be 3 therapists, 3 physical therapists. Somewhere around there.
You do a little bit more juggling based on the health or physical therapy status of the current residents, right?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, because you have to justify what you're doing. And when insurance companies and, you know, the payer sources are pushing you to take the complex patients, maybe not 5 days a week of physical therapy, it may not happen. So you have to juggle that with your schedule. You have to juggle that with the therapists that are on staff, and you have to be prepared for those roadblocks.
Yeah. So you spoke a little bit, you touched on frequency a little bit there, and you mentioned a number you don't hear very often unless it's lymphedema or maybe some other skilled service in outpatient land. What does a frequency look like, you know, as far as how often you would see a resident? I mean, what's the typical? We know 3x4 and 2x6 are pretty common in outpatient. What's that look like for you?
Generally, the best rule of thumb is whatever that you deem necessary on evaluation is going to be likely. You know, if you're going into a room and this person, let's say they've been on a ventilator for 3 weeks, how likely is it that they're going to be able to participate for 5 to 7 times a week? Probably not very likely. Let's start out with 3 times a week. And then on progress note or reevaluation or research, you bump it up to 5 times a week. But generally for me, I always recommend if you feel like they can tolerate it, and most of them do, they want to get better in a short period of time, they want to go back home. So for me, I always, let's say 5 times a week is probably a general rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. Because if you do 7 times a week, then it gets dicey with weekend staff and stuff like that. You might miss a visit. So if we can get 5 times a week, they're going to get optimal amount of care. They're going to get optimal amount of frequency, and they're going to be seen almost on a daily basis.
I see. Yeah. So obviously there's clinician decision-making in there, but it sounds like higher frequencies aren't uncommon if you can get there. I think it's a really like pulling teeth in outpatient to get a physician to sign anything more than 3 days a week. So
yes, I remember in outpatient, it was even sometimes 3 times a week. You have to, yep, you know, you have to really justify and put it embedded in a person's mind that that's really what's going to help you.
Right.
Frequency is king.
Right. So for all the people listening that, you know, say, hey, skilled nursing, being a manager in skilled nursing's got to be just so different from any other setting or outpatient, at least, because I speak from typically an outpatient, you know, center and experience. What would you say to them?
It is, but it isn't. It's all the same beast, really. And hindsight 2020, looking back, being a clinic director, an outpatient, or being a rehab director in a skilled nursing facility, they're both very extrinsic jobs. You're going to be involved in basically the same things. You want to make sure that your staff is prepared. You want to make sure that they're scheduling who they need to be with, and they need to be working on their productivity standards and their billable units. I mean, all those things are pretty generally the same.
Yeah, and it sounds like you already disclosed or basically debunked the myth of you move at a turtle pace in skilled nursing.
I wish. and honestly, they want you to move even faster. Even as a manager, I've heard of some places, and there's still some places now where I'll talk to a manager and they had 0% productivity for a rehab director. Now, if you're in that role and your requirement is 0% productivity and you're basically just in charge of doing the business aspect, that's going to be a turtle pace.
Right.
That, you know.
So that's what we refer to as heavy admin time. So
yes.
Basically no clinical hours are necessary with somebody that they label 0% productivity. But if it was 50% in your current setting, in your establishment, do you have the flexibility to schedule which days you see patients and which times? As long as you hit that metric?
Yeah. So one thing about this setting is you can be flexible throughout the day. I don't have to see anybody at any particular time. I just need to see them when they are ready. When I feel like they're going to be at their peak potential, that's when I need to see them. And it's really up to them. They're ultimately the boss when it comes to when their therapy happens.
Yeah.
I see the future going to where the productivity standard is going to be even higher for directors.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. That's kind of where I wanted to go next is what's changing in skilled nursing world? Obviously, there's a bunch. I know some of it. But from when I just say that word, like what's ahead? What's it look like in the landscape and context of skilled nursing?
I don't know if it's a whole lot of positivity, man. For me, my productivity standard is 70%.
Right.
That's busy.
Right.
That means 70% of my time I need to be with the patient. I need to be doing notes, progress notes, discharges, or evals. And really, it puts my day pretty long. It's not too often that I actually leave at 8 hours. It's usually 8.5, 9 hours, and that's pretty common, and it's something that I've accepted. But I see the future going to where that's going to be an even bigger push.
So why do you think that productivity is going to increase or become more challenging for the skilled nursing? Is it simply Medicare cuts or is it the complexity codes? What is it what's the beast that keeps you up at night?
The money. It's all about you doing a job where somebody else is going to make the profit. And ultimately they want you to work harder, faster, see more. And that's it, because that's the way they make the most amount of money.
Right. And
it's sad.
And it becomes even more challenging just with payer stuff. And that being said, what would you tell current students as far as maybe advocacy or things to look into prior to making decisions as far as setting that they want to go into or certain entity, that sort of thing? What would you advise a new grad or soon to be grad to look at?
I would definitely say the most important things, obviously I haven't been working as long as some people, but just in 2 years, the biggest factors are growth opportunity, continuing education opportunities, benefits, those things that generally take the back seat for a new graduate. They all, most people, they want to see a bigger paycheck or something equivalent to that because they went to school for a long time and everybody's got student loan debt. But what setting inspires you to be with people and to help people, and what setting is going to provide you long-term success?
Yeah, and that's so important. I think that's the big key is, a couple $1,000 raise does not change whether or not you do not like the people
exactly.
Working around or the setting that you're working in. It cannot replace happiness and the demographics of who you work with. If that's something you're passionate about with the niche market or something like that, that makes all the difference. So I definitely would kudo that.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to jump around. I mean, hey, your students, you're young, you're graduating, check it all out. Figure out where you really want to be, what inspires you the most each day. Because at the end of the day, it is a job, but you need to be happy. We spend a lot of time doing this, and we went to school for a long time to be very unhappy.
Yeah. Here's a little bit of a fun question for you on this. What was your first big error or learning moment in skilled nursing as a manager? What was the I just have been learned just then?
Oh, gosh, there's been so many.
I know. That's what's
so, I mean, so fun about. I'm still learning. oh, my gosh. Definitely, even though when you're a manager of skilled nursing, you're ultimately going to have a boss, no matter what position you're in, and they're going to tell you what to do and what you need to do right or wrong. And really, I think the biggest, I guess the first uh-oh I had was misscheduling patients or not getting the units that I could have possibly received with the patient. Those things right there, when you realize, oh man, like this is, there's somebody higher than me that wants a financially driven business.
Right.
At the end of the day, it is a business.
Yeah. Which comes back to mission and vision of some of these entities and kind of understanding that. And, you know, I don't want everybody to think of, okay, it's all about money and bottom line does matter. That's for sure. But a lot of the oopsies come from, I think, a lack of touching points during physical therapy education on that sort of stuff. I think we try and shy away from talking about some of that. There's a lot of, connotations to it and hurt feelings that come with it, as well as ethical questions that are raised and basically a great debate surrounding that. And I think at least my exposure was not enough of that going on in physical therapy education. What do you think?
I would definitely agree. I mean, I don't know if anyone's really prepared for that side of healthcare through school. I mean, it's really it's not touched on quite a bit to prepare you for that side or the business aspect of what you do every day.
Right. APTA definitely has a lot of resources on that. You pointed us to some Con Ed things, just education on Medicare billing or understanding that. Obviously, those things are covered in physical therapy school to some extent, but they probably change by the time you graduate. Is there any resource that you use to educate yourself or particular continuing education module, anything like that, that you use as a reference?
I do use APTA. Obviously, I check their website quite frequently because there's always going to be, there's a big looming fear of the Medicare cuts for 2021. So I like to stay up to date on that. I use Twitter. I follow, people that I think are profound physical therapists in the physical therapy career. I think Twitter has become a great place to find information. People are constantly sharing links to, articles or resources. MedBridge is a good one for any sort of continuing education. If you want to go that route and pay for the courses, and they prepare you for any sort of OCS or GCS or any further training like that. And I will say, I need to bring this up. I will say another oopsie I had in skilled nursing. make sure you read the HNP. You want to visually read everyone's health and medical records before you treat them. Never take anybody's word of mouth. You want to see it visually for yourself as a therapist.
Yep.
Sometimes a nurse will tell you that their weight bearing is tolerated, and more often than not, they might be wrong on it. So definitely read that yourself.
That's wise advice there.
Yes.
And then kind of want to wrap things up here, but I know you've got to get back to the rest of your day. But what would you say that you're currently doing now, either personally or professionally, to improve either element in your life?
Definitely finding, I'm recently married, so you want to find a sweet spot between work and life. Mm-hmm. And right now I am enrolled in a MBA. So I'm getting my MBA right now in healthcare administration. So hopefully to use that and try and push further into healthcare administration and try to go that route and understand even more of the aspects of running a business and being a manager and those sorts of details. So hopefully it works out where it works in my favor, and you know, we'll see what else is out there.
Yeah, that's a lot more formal than what I was going to say a lot of people would say, which is maybe reading a book or something like that.
I've tried it, man, but I feel like I'm the best version of myself as a student. I enjoy learning, so I was like, well, you know, let's go back to school. Let's do a little online classes.
Perfect.
It never hurts.
Yeah, I definitely can understand that. I mean, what else would you spend your time with, right?
Exactly. Why read a book when I can learn about managerial economics?
Oh, that sounds lovely, man. I wish that I could jump on that. Last question for you. If you could go back and tell yourself, like the early version of yourself, one thing to advise on your career and your future, what would it be?
It's not always about the money. You know, I think I jumped out of outpatient and I jumped in skilled nursing because the first thing you see in skilled nursing is, you know, generally they're paid better. You know, your hourly rate is going to be higher in a skilled nursing setting. Some people might see that and jump into it or worry because an outpatient setting is not where the money is per se. But that's not always the case. You know, right. Be patient. It's not always about the paycheck. It's about where you want to be in 5 to 10 years. The money will come. First things first, be successful as a therapist.
Yep. And you already mentioned that even though that paycheck, that hourly rate is higher or significantly higher in some cases, you don't always get the hours that you want or
no.
Because of efficiency and some of those other metrics. Because the way that the industry is set up for skilled nursing.
Exactly. Before I became a rehab director, my hourly rate was higher than outpatient. It was several dollars higher. You know, I'd probably say for most people, it's going to be $5 to $10 more per hour. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I was generally making about the same that I was in outpatient.
Right.
You know, because you're not always going to be there 8 hours. Some right. days it might be 4 hours. Some days it might be 6 hours. It really depends. And that hourly rate, you know, don't see it and think, oh, this is the end all be all. You're, you know, finding the right setting is what's most important, and finding the people that you care for and what makes you be the best physical therapist possible. That's what's ultimately the most important thing.
Definitely want to find a setting where you find that spark and you're inspired at least weekly.
Yes.
To be a better version of yourself next week for the sake of your patients or your team. I think that's a huge thing and it transcends any setting. And so I appreciate you echoing that.
Yes, definitely. And I haven't given up on outpatient as a therapist. You know, I think after I finish my MBA, I'm going to try to get my OCS.
Yeah.
Because one thing I have learned is if you don't learn that information and continue learning, you're going to forget it.
Right.
Especially a lot of the information that you would use in an outpatient setting, especially with direct access, that stuff can go and collect cobwebs.
Yeah, no, for as with any setting, for sure. You're saying?
But we'll see. Who knows?
Yeah, you got, who knows, they may invent another one for you that you might like in the future, you know? Seems to be no shortage of educational opportunities.
No, definitely not.
But I want to thank you for your time and hanging out with us on Spilling the DPT. And
absolutely, man.
Definitely really appreciate you carving that out. I'm sure all the listeners will enjoy the information that you've given them and shed light into skilled nursing and some of the comparisons or, I guess, stark contrast to outpatient world. That being said, would you, how would you advise the listeners to contact you regarding any comments or feedback from this episode?
If anybody has any questions regarding skilled nursing or me personally or any journey that I've been on, you can reach out. LinkedIn, you can send me a message on LinkedIn. Just Google my name or search my name on LinkedIn, Sheldon Feltz. Or you can get my information from Ryan, my email, my phone number. Feel free. I'm always here. If anything, you know, I can help people that are trying to determine what's best for them. You know, where do I go once I graduate? Or, you know, I've been working for a year or two. I don't know what to do. Maybe I'm unhappy. Maybe I need to go find some happiness in another setting. Hey, feel free to reach out. I'll give the best advice that I can.
Well, we appreciate that again. We're thanking Dr. Sheldon Feltz, and we're going to wrap up our conversation on skilled nursing. So thank you.
Thank you, man.
And that's all for this episode of Spilling the DPT. If you like this episode, please feel free to drop us a review and subscribe for endless tea, and follow me on Instagram at Spilling the DPT. We are found where all great podcasts live: Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, Pandora, TuneIn, Amazon, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. We look forward to spilling with you all next time.